Lend me your umbrella.
The house where McMurdo lived was well suited for what the Scowrers had planned. It stood on the fringe of the town and well back from the road. And there were only two boarders, both of them brothers of the lodge. In any other case, the conspirators would simply have ambushed their man and emptied their pistols into him as they had many a time before. But this instance was different.
We have to find out how much he knows already.
And how much he's passed back to his employers.
Maybe we're already too late.
If we are, at least we'll have our revenge.
No, 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 we're not too late. If he knew anything big already, why did he pay me for the nonsense I fed him? And why did he agree to come here tonight? When he comes, I'll take him into the hall, make sure he's alone. Then I'll bring him in here.
And we'll show him the hospitality of the lodge.
What's the time?
Half an hour to go.
This is very good. Why don't you have some? Very good.
Can you entertain yourself tonight?
I beg your pardon?
I'm going to spend an hour or so alone in Douglas's study.
Do Mrs. Douglas and Barker know?
No, I arranged it all with Ames the butler after you'd left. I think it's going to be very valuable. Soak up the atmosphere, that sort of thing.
Soak up the atmosphere.
With the aid of your umbrella, yes.
Holmes, if you're expecting danger, that's a wretched sort of weapon.
Oh, I'm not. If it was danger threatening, I'd take you with me.
Mr. Holmes! Doctor!
Gentlemen.
You two look as though you've had a good afternoon.
Aye, we did that, Doctor.
We've had the bicycle identified.
Oh, congratulations.
We took the machine over to Tunbridge Wells and showed it round the hotels. Mm-hmm. The manager of the Eagle Commercial knew it at once.
It belonged to a man named Hargreave, who checked in 2 days before and then disappeared.
The man was about 50 and tallish.
That's a little vague, Mr. Mac.
Well, it wasn't the sort to draw attention, Doctor. The manager did better with his clothes. A heavy grey suit with a reefer jacket and a yellow overcoat.
But this is the real snorter. The man was definitely an American.
Prime up that stove, Willoughby.
You cold, McMurdo?
We'll strap him across it till he squeals.
How much longer?
15 minutes.
Leicester. Nottingham.
Nottingham.
Southampton.
Southampton.
East Ham.
East Ham.
And Derby, and Richmond, and 12 other...
14.
14 other places. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Is this the missing American?
Aye, Doctor. Telegrams in response to our appeal. The country seems to be full of fugitives in yellow overcoats.
Dear me. Well, Mr. Mack and Mr. White Mason, I have a piece of very earnest advice for you.
Oh, man, I'll be pleased to hear it.
Abandon the case. Holmes?
You think it's hopeless?
Yes, I do.
But this cyclist must be somewhere. Why shouldn't we be able to find him?
Oh, I don't doubt he's somewhere. I'm sure you'll find him. But stop wasting your energies in Richmond and East Ham, gentlemen.
But last night you were congratulating us.
What's happened since then?
Two things. I spent a couple of hours at Bilston Manor.
And?
And I've read this.
You didn't tell me about this.
Well, I'm glad it's not just us you keep in the dark, Mr. Holmes. What is that, Doctor?
The ancient manor house of Bilston. A short history.
Short? But exceedingly interesting, and purchasable at the modest sum of one penny from the local tobacconist.
Oh, you're making fools of us. This has nothing to do with the murder.
Isn't it? Breadth of view, Mr. Mack, one of the essentials of our profession. Take it from someone older and more experienced.
I don't dispute that you're both of those, Mr. Holmes. But you have a damned round-the-corner sort of way of getting to your point.
Why on earth should we drop the case?
For the simple reason, my dear sir, that you don't have the faintest idea of what it is that you're investigating.
I spent a very enjoyable hour alone here last night, and before that, Ames the butler was a mine of helpful information. He gave me this.
An old slipper?
What are those stains?
Blood, exactly. This is one of the slippers which were adorning the feet of Mr. Cecil Barker when he discovered the body.
Oh, well, then of course it's covered in blood. The whole corner of the room's covered in blood, and worse.
Look at this.
Oh, we've seen it. The killer's footprint on the sill.
And if I place the slipper over it...
Good God!
It's an exact match.
But what the devil was Barker doing climbing out of the window?
And now, this well-concealed, muddy footprint behind the curtain.
That one doesn't match at all.
I said it was a snorter.
You did, and you went wrong. Most of the rest of my time here was spent in a renewed search for the missing dumbbell.
What missing dumbbell?
Oh, sorry, didn't I mention that? Remiss of me. The entire case hinges on the missing dumbbell.
Mr. Holmes.
I've one more piece of advice.
Well, I hope it's a sight more practical than the last one.
I recommend a nice, cheery country walk for both of you. Then lunch at some suitable hostelry. And this evening, tired but happy...
Man, this is getting past the
And this evening, I'd be obliged if you'd join me at the gates to this house before dusk, without fail, Mr. Mac.
Oh, that sounds more like sanity.
Oh, it was all excellent advice. Oh, one thing before we part.
Well?
I want you to write a note to Mr. Barker.
Saying what?
Here, I've drafted it for you.
Well?
That's not possible, Mr. Holmes. I've already inquired.
Nonetheless...
Give me that.
Well, Inspector, what does it say?
It says, Doctor, that at first light tomorrow, a gang of police workmen are going to set to divert the river that runs through this estate.
Divert the river?
Yes. We're going to drain the moat.
He's not coming.
It's not mine yet, Baldwin.
Ah, you bungled it. He was wise to you.
Quiet.
And we're sitting here like rats in a trap.
If you can't shut your mouth, Baldwin, I'll shut it for you.
He'll come. My word on it.
Watson?
Yes. This gives us a good view of the study.
Excellent.
Well, we're here. What do we do now?
We possess our souls in patience.
Well, why are we here at all?
And try to make as little noise as possible. We have to set the scene to glorify our results sometimes. This would be a drab and sordid sort of profession if we didn't.
I'm a believer in direct action.
Oh, Mr. Mac, the blunt accusation, the brutal tap on the shoulder. What could poor Watson here make of that? Hmm? But the subtle trap.
The quick inference.
The clever forecast.
The anticipation, the thrill.
Yes, the thrill. Where would that be if I'd explained everything beforehand? Where's the pride and justification in that? All I ask is a little patience. Everything will become clear.
Well, I hope the pride and the justification and the rest of it come before we all catch our death of cold.
Oh, on the subject of the clever forecast...
No, I don't think I've forgotten.
Forgotten what?
Mr. Holmes has an informant in London who predicted this murder.
Good God! Who is he?
We don't know. He's just a name, Porlock.
And it's the man behind him that matters.
Are you still sticking to that?
Oh, yes, yes. Professor James Moriarty. The most dangerous criminal in England.
You think he's behind this? Well, why wasn't I told?
Oh, it's just Mr. Holmes's bee in the bonnet. I made some inquiries myself, you know.
About Moriarty?
Aye, Doctor. I went to see him.
Did you indeed?
And I'm bound to say that he struck me as a very respectable, learned and talented sort of man.
Oh, I'm glad you've got so far as to recognise the talent.
Oh, man, you can't help but recognise it. I had a chat with him about eclipses.
Eclipses?
Was that what you wanted to chat with him about?
Well, no, it wasn't. To be truthful with you, how the talk got that way, I kinda think.
Yeah.
But somehow it did. And I'll tell you, he had out a reflector lantern and a globe, and he made it all seem clear to me in a minute.
Eclipses. Something dark concealing something light. Moriarty's mirror image and explained with a reflector lantern. He was playing with you.
He lent me a book on the subject too, but I don't mind saying it was a bit over my head. But his whole manner, it struck me he'd have made a grand minister of the Kirk.
Dear God.
I'm telling you, Mr. Holmes, when he put his hand on my shoulder as we were parting, It was like a father's blessing before you go out into the cold, cruel world.
The man's a genius.
Mr. Mac, James Moriarty sits at the centre of a web that stretches across the entire criminal world.
But you have no proof, man.
He draws checks on 6 different banks. He owns priceless works of art, and he pays his chief of staff £6,000 a year.
That's more than the Prime Minister gets.
The professor's official salary is £700 per annum.
But how can this professor be connected with this affair?
Look, what is it?
It's what we've been waiting for.
There's a light in the study.
Someone's moving about. Can you see who it is?
No.
Wait.
I still can't see.
Is that a gun?
No. A grappling hook.
Fishing, is it?
There.
What is it?
Now, come on!
Good evening, Mr. Cecil Barker.
What the devil's the meaning of this? What do you all want?
That's what we want. That bundle you've just fished up from the bottom of the moat.
How in thunder do you know about that?
I know about it because I put it there.
You messed up.
Perhaps I should say replaced it there. I fished it up myself last night with the aid of Dr. Watson's excellent umbrella.
How did you know it was there in the first place?
The missing dumbbell.
Very good, Watson. The missing dumbbell. The crucial clue. You'll find it weighing down this interesting catch. There. One pair of boots. American, you'll note. One grey tweed suit with a reefer jacket. And one yellow overcoat.
What did I tell you? He's not coming.
Mr. Barker, I seem to be standing in the way of your explanation.
If you know so much, Mr. Holmes, perhaps you'd better tell us some more.
I could tell you a great deal more, but it would come with a better grace from you.
Oh, you think so, do you?
Yes, I do.
And he's not the only one. Are you going to explain this or not?
If there's a secret here, it's not mine to tell.
Oh, that's your line, is it? Mr. Cecil Barker, I'm arresting
you. You can do what you damn well like.
No, Cecil.
Ivy!
Don't make it worse for yourself. You've done enough for us without that.
Enough and more than enough. Oh.
Mrs. Douglas, are you ill?
It's this room. I'll be all right.
Madam, I urge you to take the police completely into your confidence.
Yes. Yes, I shall. But not here.
Which is the correct room?
Mr. Holmes?
I knew we couldn't fool you. The dining room. Let's go into the dining room.
You came then?
Of course.
You brought the money?
Show me this proof.
Come through.
Well, where is he? Where's Birdie Edwards?
He's here, Counselor. I am Birdie Edwards.
Here.
Thank you, Doctor.
Now, will somebody please tell me what all this is about?
Aye. Come along now, Mrs. Douglas. Tell us everything.
Well...
One moment.
What is it now?
Simply this. I think it might be best for all concerned if we were to ask someone else to tell the story.
What?
Don't you agree, Mr. Douglas?
Good God.
Gentlemen, my name is Jack Douglas.
Make a single move and the next bullet woke me for the ceiling. My men are all around this house.
And you gentlemen are well and truly under arrest.
I've heard of you. Sherlock Holmes.
At your service.
And you too, John H. Watson?
Mr. Douglas.
You're the historian of this bunch, isn't that right? Well,
I'd lay my last dollar you've never had a story like mine pass through your hands before.
There. I've spent the last few days in that rat trap putting it into words. You're welcome to it. You and your public.
Move on there. Keep those hands where we can see them.
Come on, Wolf. Keep moving.
You damned traitor, McMurdo.
Well, I guess you can call me that if it eases your pain, Jack McGinty.
I can call you more than that. I can call you murderer. Yeah. Captain, this man's responsible for the death of Chester Wilcox and his whole family.
Now, is that so? Then how can it be that I saw Wilcox and his brood alive and well only this afternoon?
What?
I made sure they were all well away before I blew their house, McGinty. Just as I made sure a lot of other jobs went wrong.
You were there when old Stanger got taught a lesson. That makes you an accomplice.
I stopped Baldwin from kicking the man to death. That makes me something else, I'm thinking.
It makes you something special right enough. Something very special. Why, you...
One more word out of you, Baldwin.
Brother!
Or you, Counselor McGinty.
If any one of you escapes the noose, you know what you have to do. I've said all I have to say. Get me away from this filthy traitor!
Sergeant!
All right, move! Move! Come on.
You okay? My God, Andrew. I wouldn't go through those months again for 10 times the money.
You got those devils, and that's what counts.
Yes, I got them. But I had to go to hell to do it. Come on. Let's finish the job.
Many extra men of the Coal and Iron Police had been brought in secret into the small township of Vermissa for that night's work. Lodge 341 was soon no more. In the early hours of the next morning, a beautiful woman and a young man, fresh-faced, large-eyed and smiling, could be seen at the small hut which served as Vermissa's railroad station.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew you could never be like them. Oh, John.
Oh, my little...
The special train sent by the railroad company made a swift, unbroken journey away from the land of coal, iron, clank, and roar. It was the last time Etty Shafter and her lover ever set foot in the Valley of Fear. 10 days later, they were married, with old Jacob Shafter as witness of the wedding. The trial of the Scarers was held far away from any place where their adherents might have terrified the guardians of the law. The work of Bertie Edwards was complete.
That's the past, Mr. Douglas. What we want is your story of the present.
No, wait. Just wait. Are you truly Jack Douglas of Burlston Manor?
I am, sir. Leastways, I am now.
Then whose death have we been investigating these last 2 days?
And where the devil did you spring out from?
Mr. Mack, you wouldn't read that excellent pamphlet.
The history of the house. Of course.
Yes, it really is very informative. The architecture, the design, the gardens, the various owners, the concealment of King Charles during the Civil War.
Apparently, your people didn't hide in those days without reliable places to hide in.
And a bolt hole that's been used once can be used again. How long have you been playing this trick on us, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, how long have you let us waste our time and our efforts on a wild goose chase?
Not for one instant. It was only last night that I knew for sure that the dead man wasn't Jack Douglas, but your elusive cyclist. And that Douglas was almost certainly still in the house, waiting for quieter times and his chance to slip away.
Well, you figured it out right.
So is this still a murder investigation, or isn't it?
Mr. Douglas?
I don't know how I stand under your law, but I'll tell you this. There's been nothing in this business I wouldn't do again. And I think the same goes for Ivy and Cecil there.
We've done nothing we're ashamed of.
Nothing.
It all comes down to this. There are men who have good cause to hate me. They hunted me from Chicago to California, and they chased me out of America. But when I moved here and settled down with a new name and a new life, I thought they'd never find me. Well, I was wrong.
You saw one of these men when you went into Tunbridge Wells.
The worst of them all. But I know my business, Mr. Holmes. I made sure he didn't see me.
You came back here and waited for him to track you down.
I did. It happened a damn sight sooner than I was expecting. Still careless, Baldwin. Still careless. You see, I'd seen his boots under the curtain as soon as I came into the room. I don't know if it was him or me pulled the trigger. Maybe it was both of us together. Anyway, he got both barrels full in the face. He may have escaped the noose 20 years ago, but justice had caught up with him at last.
Were you the first on the scene, Mr. Barker?
I was. That much was true, at least. Good God in heaven!
John, what's happening?
Ivy, don't come in!
You did see the body. No wonder you couldn't bear to be in the room just now.
Yes, I saw it. I don't think I'm ever going to get that sight out of my head.
Come on, my love. Sit down now.
Oh, Jack, for God's sake, what's happening?
I'll tell you everything, I swear. I should have done it years ago, but not now. Are you going to be all right up here on your own?
That man, who was he? My God, who shot him? Was it you? Jack, was it you?
Ivy, listen, I've got to go and sort this out.
We must send for the police.
No, not yet.
Why not? Jack, I want to know what this all means.
You shall, but not now.
Yes, now. Tell me now.
I'll tell you this much. It's over. At last, it's over. I'd already had the idea. Yeah, I seemed to see it all clear at a glance. His height and weight were much the same as mine. No one could swear to his face, poor devil. And of course, he had the mark. The brand of the Scourers.
You exchanged clothes and therefore identities.
All except for my wedding ring. It would have taken a file to get it off. I was glad. That ring's all I've got left of my first wife. She died of the typhoid just a few years after we married. I'd not have given it to Ted Baldwin, even if it cost me the whole game.
You changed clothes and went and hid in the priest hole and left your accomplice to do the rest.
It was simple enough. The footprint, the card, the shotgun.
The dead man's clothes, you bundled them up.
And got rid of them in the quickest, easiest place you could think of. The moat.
Man, if you hadn't used the dumbbell, we might never have been on to you.
And then, with everybody else safely out of the way, you rang for the servants.
But what about the housekeeper's evidence?
Perfectly genuine. Mrs. Douglas?
Cecil, Mr. Barker, gave me a signal and I came down the stairs again. I had to pretend that I'd just heard the shot.
Which you did well enough. It was your willingness to be led away from your husband's body that was less convincing.
So the murder, the shooting, actually happened quite a bit earlier than the servants thought.
Half an hour or so. It's not easy undressing a dead man.
Well, that's it. It seemed to me that all I had to do was lie low for a while, then I could get away someplace. Ivy could come out and be with me, and we could finally live at peace. A new life in a new land. That's the truth. The whole truth, so help me God. Now, What are you going to do with me?
Writing it up.
Getting my notes in order.
You're not using Douglas's own words?
More or less. But I gave him his manuscript back.
Oh.
I thought he ought to have it. It's an historic sort of document.
I suppose so.
Certainly a splendid story. And with the right ending, too. Killing in self-defense. And just a mild warning about trying to deceive the police. Very satisfactory. Anything interesting in the post?
What?
Ah, that's how this whole business started, isn't it? Holmes? What's wrong?
They're on the Palmyra, bound for South Africa. A new life in a new land.
And?
Look at this.
My God.
Lost overboard in a calm sea.
No one knows how the accident occurred. No.
Accident?
Are you saying the Scourers did it?
Not the Scourers, Moriarty.
Moriarty? I'm sorry. I just don't see how he can be connected to all this.
The Scourers needed someone to track down Douglas for them.
And this Moriarty can be hired?
Yes, he's a consultant. His services can be bought just like any other consultants.
But even if you're right, the Scourers had their own assassin. Moriarty wasn't employed to kill Douglas.
Well, maybe not, but his power rests on his reputation. He can't afford to be linked to a failure. Besides, he's a mathematician. Mathematics is a precise science. Moriarty can't tolerate untidiness.
Dear God. And so he murdered him.
With my help.
What?
I killed Jack Douglas as surely as if I pushed him myself.
Oh, that is utter nonsense.
His plan was a good one. Mason and MacDonald would have accepted things at face value. Douglas's death would have been reported and that would have been an end to it. If I hadn't insisted on solving the case, another triumph for Sherlock Holmes.
Rubbish! If this Moriarty's as good as you say he is, he wouldn't have relied on newspaper reports. He'd have found out the truth for himself, even if you'd done nothing. The outcome would have been exactly the same.
I should have protected him, made him understand the danger.
Good God, Holmes! You're not some kind of infallible machine. You mustn't do this to yourself. You mustn't. Besides, you can't be sure, can you? Not absolutely sure. It may truly have been an accident.
The report's just come in, sir. A good, clean job. No complications. Nothing out of the ordinary in the luggage, except this. Some sort of manuscript. The Colonel thought you'd like to see it.
Thank you. My life in the Valley of Fear. I shall read it with pleasure. You may go.
Good night, Professor.
Good night. It was the 4th of February. In the year 1875, and the snow lay deep in the gorges of the Gilmerton Mountains. This is the most desolate corner of the United States of America.
No, it was him.
I can tell a Moriarty when I see one. And do we just have to sit down under this? Can no one get level with this man?
No, I don't say that. I don't say that he can't be beaten. But you must give me time. You must give me time.
In Episode 2 of The Valley of Fear by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. John McMurdo, Ian Glenn. Inspector MacDonald, Mark Bonner. White Mason, Timothy Bateson. Ivy Douglas, Becky Hindley. Cecil Barker, Gavin Muir. Etty Shafter, Amanda Gordon. Jack McGinty, Constantine Gregory. Ted Baldwin, Stephen Critchlow. Mike Scanlon, Peter Gunn, Captain Marvin, Jonathan Keeble. Ronald Pickup was Professor Moriarty. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The pianist was Michael Haslam. The violinist, Abigail Young. The Valley of Fear was dramatized for radio by Bert Cools and directed by Enid Williams.
I have kept this secret from my husband for 3 years now. 3 years that seem to me a lifetime, and which I can bear no longer. You must believe me when I say I have struggled to put the past and all it means to me out of my life. But I find my struggle is all in vain, and I now have an overpowering desire to be once again with the one I love so dearly, where we can be together once more. And hopefully put an end to this heartache which causes such pain and makes of my life a sham. Alice?
Yes, Mom?
There's a letter I would like you to post.
The Yellow Face by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Jerry Jones. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Joan Matheson as Mrs. Hudson, Mark Straker as Grant Monroe, and Helena Breck as Effie Monroe. The Yellow Face.
More whiskey, Holmes?
No, thank you, Watson. Kind of you, but I've drunk more than enough.
Excuse my asking, but anything wrong?
What way wrong?
Well, I hesitate to say, but you look unwell, Holmes.
Do I indeed?
Not unwell, are you?
No, Watson, I am not unwell. At least not what is normally meant by the term.
Then what...
Bored is what I am, my dear fellow. When I'm between cases, I feel bored. Bored to my very bones. Bored.
Then perhaps another drink would help.
Oh, very well. Never need to halt your needless concern.
Nothing like a drink when you're down in the dumps.
Except for cocaine, Watson.
Wow.
That is the magic potion that gives me glimpses of paradise.
Mm, and brings you down to earth with a bump.
Like love, I'm told.
Yeah. Strange business, love. Nothing lasts, they say.
They're right, Watson. Nothing is forever. Though boredom, I must say, gives a remarkably good impression of it.
Holmes, I have a suggestion to make.
Can I help you, sir?
I wish to speak to Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
I'm afraid Mr. Holmes is not in at the moment, sir.
Blast!
But he will be returning, sir.
Do you know how long he will be?
I'm afraid not, sir. Mr. Holmes' schedule is somewhat erratic at the moment.
May I wait for him in his room?
Certainly, sir. Please come in.
I should have known better than allow you to coax me into a stroll in the park, Watson. Let us sit down for a moment.
Just look about you, Holmes. You must admit those trees are quite beautiful.
Only if you will admit that relentless beauty can be devastatingly dull.
Dull? This? You hardly know the meaning of the word, do you? Oh, I envy you, my dear fellow. I'm bored and you walk constantly in wonder.
Oh, I must say, Holmes, I shall certainly be glad when a new case comes your way. Very glad indeed.
So will I. Oh, so will I.
It's always the same. If you're not solving some mystery or other, you don't seem to be alive.
Because I'm not. Cases are my reason, my only real reason for living. If you will not promise to love forever, said the man to his lady love, what is the point of forever?
I still think the view beautiful from here.
What's it like at midnight?
Oh, cheer up, old friend. Something will happen.
Of course. It always does.
Here we are, sir. Please take a seat.
Thank you. Is it all right if I smoke my pipe?
I'm sure that is perfectly acceptable, sir. As you can see, Mr. Holmes is quite something of a pipe smoker himself. Now, you just sit down and relax, sir. I'm sure he'll not be too long.
Relax. So easy to say. How can I relax?
I must advise you, Watson, and I do it with all sincerity. Should you ever in the future suggest a visit to the zoological gardens, I shall screech louder than any known monkey.
But many of the animals are interesting, you have to admit.
Let them from their cages, then they would be interesting.
Well, yes.
And now I suggest we release ourselves.
Another walk?
Yes. Home.
Oh, sir, you're leaving.
I certainly am. It seems he's never going to come.
I'm sure you'll only need to wait a little longer, sir.
Then I'll wait in the open air. I feel half choked.
I really am sorry, sir, but as I said, Mr. Holmes's activities at the moment...
Yes, yes, I know, but I'm stifled. I must get some air.
As you wish, sir. I'm sure Mr. Holmes will be sorry to have missed you.
Yes. Well, I'll be back before long.
I'll let him know when he returns, sir.
To be frank with you, Watson, and I'm fully aware that you've been doing everything with the best of intentions, I find walking an act of pleasure completely without interest. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your concern for my welfare, but moving the muscles without purpose is quite meaningless.
So it would be no use my suggesting an art gallery?
Oh, no, none whatsoever. I intend to go home and do nothing but sit, read, smoke and sleep.
Sorry, Holmes. I've been making some rather miserable suggestions, haven't I?
No, Watson. It's just that you've been making them to a rather miserable man.
Excuse me, Mr. Holmes, but there was a gentleman earlier wishing to speak to you.
So much for afternoon walks, Watson. Has this gentleman gone then, Mrs. Hudson?
Yes, sir.
Oh, didn't you ask him in?
Yes, sir, he came in.
How long did he wait?
Half an hour, sir.
Tell me, Mrs. Hudson, did you notice anything particular about him?
Well, he was tall, sir, quietly dressed in a dark grey suit and carried a brown wideawake in his hand. I should put him at somewhere in his 30s.
Oh, so much for his appearance. Now for his state of mind. How are your powers of observation on that score, Mrs. Hudson?
Oh, he was much agitated and very restless. I could hear him walking and stamping about in your room all the time he was here.
Sorry you missed him, Holmes.
He did say he would return, Doctor.
Oh, thank heavens for that.
And quite soon now, I should think.
Ah, good, good. Well, all is not lost. Well done, Mrs. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Come, Watson. We'll have a smoke and await our visitor.
I say, old chap, you'll make a detective of Mrs. Hudson yet.
Yes, indeed. Even if she will only match Lestrade in noticing the obvious.
Still very annoying there, Watson.
Yes. You're badly in need of a case, and the man's impatience makes this affair appear of some importance.
Indeed. Yes, well, we shall see.
Hello. That's not your pipe on the table. Must have left his behind. Yeah. Nice old briar with a good long stem of what the tobacconists call amber.
So it is.
Well. I wonder how many real amber mouthpieces there are in London.
Some people think a fly in it is a good sign.
Really?
Yes. It's quite a branch of the trade, the putting of sham flies into the sham amber. Well, he must have been disturbed in his mind to leave a pipe behind, which he evidently values highly.
How do you know he values it highly?
Well, I should put the original cost of the pipe at, 7 and 6 pence. Now, it has, you see, been twice mended, once in the wooden stem and once in the amber. Each of these mends done, as you observe, with silver bands. Must have cost more than the pipe did originally. The man must value the pipe highly when he prefers to patch it up rather than buy a new one for the same money.
Well, I say.
Then he's bitten through his amber. It takes a muscular, energetic fellow and one with a good set of teeth to do that. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I hear him upon the stair. So we shall have something more interesting than the pipe to study.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I suppose I should have knocked. Yes, of course I should have knocked. The fact is, I am a little upset, and I ask you to put my bad manners down to that.
I quite understand. May I introduce my colleague and confidant, Dr. Watson?
Good day.
How do you do?
Now, I suggest you put your hat on the table. Yes, and take that chair.
Thank you.
I can see that you've not slept for a night or two. Yeah, that tries a man's patience more than work and even more than pleasure.
Yes, I...
May I ask how I can help you?
I want your advice, sir. I don't know what to do, and my whole life seems to have gone to pieces.
You wish to employ me as a consulting detective?
Not that only. I want your opinion as a judicious man, a man of the world. I want to know what I ought to do next. It's a very delicate thing. One does not like to speak of one's domestic affairs to strangers. It seems dreadful to discuss the conduct of one's wife with two men whom I have never met before.
Ah, your wife.
We are, as you will gather, the soul of discretion.
Your reputation leads me to know that. I've got to the end of my tether and I must have advice.
My dear Mr. Grant Munro.
What? You know my name?
If you wish to preserve your incognito, I suggest that you cease to write your name upon the lining of your hat, or else you turn the crown towards the person whom you're addressing. However, I was about to say that my friend and I have listened to many strange cases in this room, and that we've had the good fortune to bring peace of mind to many troubled souls. I trust we may do as much for you.
Oh, I trust you may.
Might I beg you, as time may prove to be of importance, to furnish me with the facts of your case without further delay?
The facts are these, Mr. Holmes. I am a married man, and have been so for 3 years. During that time, my wife and I have loved each other as fondly and lived as happily as any two that were ever joined. But now, since last Monday, there has suddenly sprung up a barrier between us. And I find that there is something in her life and in her thoughts of which I know as little as if she were the woman who brushes by me in the street. Mm. We are estranged, and I want to know why.
And what is your reason for this certainty?
There is one thing I want to impress upon you before I go any further, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, which is?
Effie loves me.
Of this you are quite sure.
Oh, don't let there be any mistake about that, Doctor. She loves me with her whole heart and soul, and never more so than now. I don't want to argue about that. A man can tell easily enough when a woman loves him.
Indeed he can.
But there is this secret between us. And we can never be the same until it is clear.
Kindly let me have the facts, Mr. Munro.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'll tell you what I know of Effie's history. She was a widow when I first met her, though she was only 25. Her name then was Mrs. Hebron. She had gone out to America when she was young and had lived in the town of Atlanta, where she married this Hebron, who was a lawyer with a good practice. They had one child. But the yellow fever broke out badly in the place, and both husband and child died of it. I have seen the death certificate. They sickened her of America, and she came back to live with a maiden aunt at Pinner, in Middlesex.
Where you met her?
Yes. She had only been there 6 months.
We fell in love and were married in a few weeks afterwards.
May I inquire as to your financial situation?
Her husband had left her well provided for, and she had a capital of about £4,500, which had been so well invested by him that it returned an average of 7%.
And your own circumstances?
I am a hop merchant myself, and as I have an income of £700 or £800, we found ourselves comfortably off and took a nice £8 a year villa at Norbury.
Ah, charming area, Norbury.
Yes, and our little place was very countrified, considering that it is so close to town. There is an inn, two houses a little above us, and a single cottage at the other side of the field which faces us. And except those, there are no other houses until you get halfway to the station. My business takes me into town at certain seasons, but in summer I have less to do, and then, in our country house, my wife and I have been as happy as could be wished.
And now perhaps...
Yes, if you would. My colleague is a little anxious for you to bring your story to the present.
There's one thing I ought to tell you before I go further.
Which is?
When we married, my wife made over all her property to me, rather against my will, for I saw how awkward it would be if my business affairs went wrong.
But she insisted?
She would have it no other way, and it was done. Well, about 6 weeks ago, she came to me and said...
Jack, when you took my money, you said that if ever I wanted any, I was to ask you for it.
Certainly. It's all your own. What do you require? £5? £10? £20?
No, Jack. I want £100.
What on earth for?
Now then, Jack, you said you were only my banker.
Yes, that's right.
Bankers do not ask questions.
Well, if you really mean it, yes. Of course you can have the money.
Oh, yes, I really mean it.
And you won't tell me why you need it?
Someday, perhaps. Someday.
We don't usually have secrets between us.
I am sorry. I wish it could be otherwise.
Very well. I'll write you a cheque. £100 it shall be. That may have nothing to do with what came afterwards, but I thought it only right to mention it.
Quite so. Details are of the essence. Pray continue.
Well, I told you just now that there is a cottage not far from our house. There is just a field between us, but to reach it you have to go along the road and then turn down a lane. Just beyond it is a nice little grove of Scotch firs, and I used to be very fond of strolling down there, for trees are always neighbourly kinds of things.
Yes, they give me much pleasure, even in the London parks.
All right, Watson, point taken.
Well, the cottage had been standing empty this 8 months, and it was a pity, for it is a pretty two-storied place. Well, last Monday evening, I was taking a stroll down that way when I met an empty van coming up the lane and saw a pile of carpets and things lying about on the grass plot beside the porch. It was clear that the cottage had at last been let. I walked past it and then, stopping, as an idle man might, I ran my eye over it and wondered what sort of folk they were who come to live so near us. And as I looked, I suddenly became aware that a face was watching me from one of the upper windows.
This clearly distressed you.
Well, yes, dreadfully. I don't know what there was about it, Mr. Holmes, but it seemed to send a chill right down my back. I was some little way off so that I could not make out the features, but there was something unnatural and inhuman about the face. Well, that was the impression I had, and I moved quickly forwards to get a nearer view of the person who was watching me. But as I did so, the face suddenly disappeared, so suddenly that it seemed to have been plucked away into the darkness of the room. I stood for 5 minutes thinking the business over and trying to analyse my impression.
Was the face of a man or a woman?
I could not tell, but the colour was what impressed me most.
The colour?
It was of a livid, dead yellow, and with something set and rigid about it.
Jaundice, perhaps?
I think not. It was shockingly unnatural. And so disturbed was I that I determined to see a little more of the new inmates of the cottage.
What may you be wanting?
I am your neighbour. My wife and I live in that house opposite.
Well, and what do you want with us?
I see that you have only just moved in, so I thought that if I could be of any help to you in any
way... We'll just ask you when we want you. Good night.
Annoyed at the churlish rebuff, I turned my back and walked home. All evening, though I tried to think of other things, my mind would still turn to the apparition at the window and the rudeness of the woman.
Did you say nothing of this to your wife?
No. She is nervous and highly strung, and I had no wish that she should share the unpleasant impression which had been produced upon myself.
A wise decision.
I remarked to her, however, before I fell asleep, that the cottage was now occupied. She made no reply. I am an extremely sound sleeper, but I slept much more lightly than usual. Half in my dreams, I was dimly conscious that something was going on in the room, and gradually became aware that my wife had dressed herself and was slipping on her mantle and her bonnet. She was deadly pale and breathing fast, glancing furtively towards the bed to see if she disturbed me. Then, thinking that I was still asleep, she slipped from the room, and an instant later I heard a sharp creaking, which could only have come from the hinges of the front door. I sat up in bed, then took my watch from under the pillow. It was 3 in the morning.
Good Lord.
What on earth could my wife be doing out on the country road at that hour?
To what conclusion did you come?
I had sat for about 20 minutes, turning the thing over in my mind, trying to find some possible explanation. The more I thought, the more inexplicable did it appear. I was still puzzling it over when I heard the door gently close again, and her footsteps coming up the stairs. She gave a violent start and a kind of gasping cry when she saw that I was awake. And that cry and start troubled me more than all the rest, for there was something indescribably guilty about them. Where in the world have you been, Effie?
Jack, you're awake. I thought nothing in the world would awake you.
Answer my question. Where have you been?
You used to say you slept the sleep of
the
dead.
Where have you been?
Please, Jack. I can understand how surprised you must be.
Answer the question.
I have never done anything like this before. It's just... Well, you see...
Yes?
Well, I felt as though I was choking. I had a desperate need for a breath of fresh air. If I had not gone outside, I really would have fainted. I stood at the door for a few minutes. I'm quite myself again. You have no need for concern.
All the time she was telling me this story, she never once looked in my direction, and her voice was quite unlike her usual tones. It was evident to me that what she was saying was false.
Did you pursue her on the point?
No. I turned my face to the wall, sick at heart. My mind filled with 1,000 venomous doubts and suspicions. All the rest of the night I tossed and tumbled, framing theory after theory, each more unlikely than the last.
And when morning came?
My wife seemed as upset as myself, and I could see from her questioning glances that she knew I disbelieved her statement and that she was at her wit's end.
Is there something wrong with your breakfast, dear?
No. Nothing wrong.
But you're hardly...
I'm not hungry.
Would you like more juice?
I have to go to the city this morning.
But you haven't...
Time I was going.
Jack?
Yes?
Nothing. It was nothing.
I see. However, Mr. Holmes, I was too disturbed in my mind to think of business matters, so I was back in Norbury by 1 o'clock. It happened that my way home took me past the cottage, and I stopped for a moment to look at the windows, wondering if by chance I might once again see the face I had seen the day before. To my surprise, the door of the cottage suddenly opened. It was nothing, however, to my surprise on seeing who it was that emerged.
Jack, I've just been to see if I could be of any assistance to our new neighbours. Why do you look at me that way?
So this is where you went on leaving your bed?
What do you mean? I've never been here before.
How can you stand there telling me what you know to be false?
Jack...
Your voice, your face, everything about you changes as you speak.
Jack, don't be angry with me.
When have I ever had a secret from you? Well, I'm going into the cottage. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
No! Oh, no, Jack, for God's sake!
Go of my arm!
I beg you not to do this. I swear that I will tell you everything one day.
Too late!
Jack... Nothing but misery can come if you enter that cottage.
I'm going in.
No, Jack. Trust me. In God's name, trust me. Trust me only this once, and I swear you will never have cause to regret it. Our whole lives are at stake in this. If you come home with me now, all will be well. If you enter that cottage, all is over between us.
You are asking a great deal of me, Effie.
I'm asking for the only thing I can ask for. Your trust.
Very well. I will trust you on one condition, and one condition only. That this mystery comes to an end from this very moment. You are at liberty to keep your secret, but you must promise me there shall be no more nightly visits, no more behaviour which is kept from me.
Oh, Jack, I will do anything you ask, anything. I promise. Believe me, I promise.
Very well. Let us say no more.
Now let's go back to the house, my dear. Come on, let us go back. Let us get away from here.
As we made our way from the cottage, I looked back, and there in the upper window was that yellow, livid face watching us. I wondered what in God's name could be the connection between that creature and my wife, or how could the woman whom I had seen the day before be connected with her.
So, what did you do?
Nothing, at first. For 2 days afterwards, I stayed at home, and my wife appeared to be keeping her promise not to go to the cottage. She seemed to be loyal to our agreement and, as far as I knew, never left the house.
You said you did nothing at first, Mr. Munro.
Yes. On the third day, something happened which gave me ample evidence that her promise was far from being kept.
And what evidence was this?
I had gone into town that day, but returned by an earlier train than usual. I entered the house and...
Effie! Effie, I'm back! Effie?
Oh, sir. So I didn't expect you.
No, I caught an earlier train.
I see. Excuse me, sir. I have things to do.
One moment.
Sir?
Where is your mistress?
She, I think she's gone for a walk, sir.
A walk?
Yes, sir.
You think so?
Excuse me, sir. I really must get on with my work now.
Is something wrong?
Wrong, sir? No, sir.
You seem somewhat upset.
Upset, sir? No, sir. It's just...
You have things to do. I quite understand. Very well. Off you go.
Thank you, sir.
My mind was instantly filled with suspicion. I rushed upstairs to make sure she was not in the house. As I did so, I happened to glance out of one of the upper windows and saw the very maid with whom I had just been speaking running across the field in the direction of the cottage. Then, of course, I saw exactly what it all meant. My wife had gone over there and had asked the servant to call her if I should return. Tingling with anger, I rushed down and strode across, determined to end the matter once and forever.
Thus you encountered your wife and the maid.
I saw them hurrying back together along the lane, but I did not stop to speak with them.
Your state of mind was focused on the cottage.
On nothing else. For in there lay the secret which was casting a shadow over my life, and I vowed that, come what might, it should be a secret no longer. I did not even knock when I reached it, but turned the handle and rushed into the passage. It was all still and quiet on the ground floor. A kettle was singing on the fire, and a large black cat lay coiled up in a basket. But there was no sign of the woman whom I had seen before. There was no one at all in the whole house. The furniture and pictures were of the most common and vulgar description, save in the one chamber at the window of which I had seen the strange face. That was comfortable and elegant. And all my suspicions rose into a fierce, bitter blaze when I saw that on the mantelpiece stood a full-length photograph of my wife, which had been taken at my request only 3 months ago. I left the place feeling a weight at my heart, such as I have never felt before. When I arrived home, my wife came out into the hall, but I was too hurt and angry to speak to her and went into my study. She followed me, however, before I could shut the door.
I'm sorry.
I think it better if you left.
You've been to the cottage, have you not? I am sorry.
Are you indeed? Well, your sorrow solves nothing.
I'm sorry that I broke my promise to you.
Oh, for God's sake, Effie, leave me alone.
But if you knew all the circumstances, I'm sure you would forgive me.
I think things have passed the point of forgiveness, don't you?
But if only you
then
knew that...
Then you'd better tell me, hadn't you?
I cannot. I cannot.
Then all I say to you is that until you tell me who it is who has been living in that cottage and who it is to whom you gave that photograph, there can be no confidences between us. Now I suggest you leave me in peace.
Jack.
Leave me in peace, Effie. Please. That was yesterday, Mr. Holmes. I have not seen her since, nor do I know any more of this strange business. All I know now is that my marriage, a marriage I treasured and thought secure, is now no more than a sham. I place myself unreservedly in your hands.
So, you say it was unclear if the face at the window was a man or a woman.
It was always at a distance.
You do appear, however, to have been much affected by its appearance, the unusual colour, the strange rigidity, and so forth.
And so would anyone.
Tell me, how long is it since your wife asked you for the £100?
Nearly 2 months.
Yes, and have you ever seen a photograph of her first husband?
No. There was a great fire in Atlanta shortly after his death, and all her papers were destroyed.
And yet she has a certificate of death. You say you saw it.
Oh, yes. She got a duplicate after the fire.
Have you ever met anyone who knew her in America?
No.
Did she ever talk of revisiting the place?
No.
Or get letters from it?
No.
Yeah, thank you. Let me advise you, then. Return to Norbury and examine the windows of the cottage again. If you have reason to believe it inhabited, do not force your way in, but send a wire to my...